everybody, welcome back to Murder in the Land of Oz.
The song gets worse and worse every time. Much like our lives, worse every fortnight. Yeah.
Every episode, we just keep coming to you with just how tragic our lives are. But that's all right. Welcome back to another episode of Murder in the Land of Oz. We're still in Western Australia. It's my turn tonight. I'm going to be presenting the case. Is there any news to tell you? Do we have new patrons we need to shout out, Zane? No, but I do have a shout out that we got on our Facebook. So we've had some lovely people engaging on our Facebook messengers, sending us lovely messages, which is very sweet of them. So we got a message the other day from, I think her name is Kieran Hearn. So she works in the central coal fields in Queensland. Fucking hard job, doll.
Oh my God.
Like, killing it. And she was talking to her partner and she would like us to cover the Azaria Chamberlain case.
We are definitely going to. That is one of the cases that we were like, okay, hypothetically, if we ever had a crime podcast, what would we talk about? And we were like,
what would we talk about?
Dingoes ate my baby. Dingoes ate my baby. We're doing it. Dingoes ate my baby.
And because Lindy Chamberlain actually came to Brisbane last year and we almost went, remember? She did like a talk at the Powerhouse.
Yeah.
But tickets were sold out so fast. Like, it was crazy. Kieran has wanted us to cover the Azaria Chamberlain case. Well, Dole, you've heard it here first. We will be. I'd say Ellen's going to do a smack bang job of that, so she'll be taking that one. Or we could double up.
We were going to double up. That was our plan. We're going to Alison Baden Clay it and both.
We'll do what we did for the Alison case, and we'll double up for Azaria. Beg your pardon. And then she also requested for us to give a shout out. So we're going to shout out to the sea crew at Isaac Plains Coal Mine, because apparently a few of them on the coal mine listen to us. So hi, guys. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. That's amazing.
Keep doing the hard work that you're doing. Like, Jesus.
I could not do that job in a million years. So
not in a million billion years. But thank you so much for listening, guys. Like, we really appreciate it. That's so lovely of you. And then we also got a lovely message from Keith today. And he was like, loving the podcast. I was like, thanks so much, Keith. And he's like, understand you've got busy lives, but more would be awesome. Dear Keith. I wish, doll, like, if we could do this full time, that would be great.
Oh, for sure. We are very busy women. We are women who like to load up our plates and then die
very
in stress.
Much so.
Every time we're like, oh my God, our lives are so hard, it's because we don't know how to be like, I don't have time in my life for that project.
No, exactly. It's so funny because I am starting therapy soon, which is very exciting.
Yay, everybody go to therapy.
Everybody go to therapy. I even just like booking in the appointments, I felt so much saner for it. But my therapist keeps on sending like the place where I'm going to, like the receptionist, like sends you messages when like your doctor has like a free appointment to see if like you want to come in. And I'm like, dolls, like I have to book this into the shed, you know? Like I have to set aside time to like come in and like talk about my problems.
Mm-hmm.
So like last minute's just like not going to do it for me, mm-hmm. but thanks for thinking of me. Always thinking about you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like if you want to become a Patreon, it's in the what's the thing called?
The show notes.
The show notes. It's in the show notes, as it is always. Oh my God. Also, Ellen, did you see on the – we have like a Mitloo chat, me, Ellen, and Zane. It's very secretive. Did you see the video that I sent you of the gorgeous Lauren McKenna and Carl McKinnon? You can hear him in the background like grooving to our opening music.
I did, and I thought it was absolutely fantastic because that is a tune
like,
and
so
a half.
So cute.
It's a banger.
Like – It's such a tune. But yeah, they were listening to this podcast like while they were on their honeymoon. And then they've been driving today, like long distances. So they've been listening to us
today.
That
is such
a
massive compliment.
She sent me a message the other day being like, oh, I just listened to the episode where you cried about Ellen leaving. Oh, my pedal. And I was like, oh, Lauren McKenna, you're a fucking stunner.
She's over it now.
She's so cute. That's not Canon Redbubble. What is this? So podcast producer Zane has just linked me to Redbubble. Is this for merch? Oh, stunning. So if you want to get some That's Not Canon merch, podcasts including us, there's our good friends at Ghosts of Boyfriends Past, which is a fucking stunning podcast. And if you haven't listened to it yet, you should.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be going on in a few weeks. Gear up.
Oh, God.
I know. Because I was like, guys, like, why didn't you ask me to do, like, the first episode? And then they said, no, no, we're, like, strategically waited for, like, more subscribers for you to come on and, like, tell all of your cooked stories.
Oh, my God.
I know. So if you want beautiful Mitlu merch, you go to redbubble.com and then search That's Not Canon, and our beautiful merch will come up, including, like, the stunning What a Bunch of Noodles and Botany Solves Crime, which, you know, beautiful... Dr. Gordon Geimer has, so if you want to, like, look
at if you
want to
be twinning with Dr. G, pick up Dr. G. a shirt at Redbubble.
There you go. Stunning. Okay. So is this how many episodes in WA have we done now? Is this our fourth or is this our third? This is fourth. Okay. So this is our fourth episode in the WA season. This is my turn tonight. And I found out about this case. How did I find out about this case? I think I did that general thing where I was like Western Australian crimes, and then I saw this one and it was quite recent and I was a bit upset at myself that I didn't really know much more about it. And then my stunning friend at work, Blair, who is such a babe, love her, was talking to her about, like, you know, cases we were going to do, and I mentioned about the murder of Aaron Page and she was like, you have to do it. Oh my gosh, most definitely. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So then I looked into this and it is honestly, it really struck a chord with me. I have a lot of emotions about this particular type of case, which I'm going to talk about at the end. But we'll get into this first. So I'm going to be talking today or tonight or whatever time you're listening about the murder of Aaron Page. So Aaron was described as innocent, helpful and kind, and he was always willing to lend a hand. He would make friends with everybody and was described as, like, someone who would just see the best in everybody, which is very sweet. And I saw a photo of him and he just, oh, sweet baby angel, my goodness. So he was diagnosed with autism at a really young age, and of course, well, not of course, but a lot of people that are on the, like, on the spectrum of some kind, they do suffer bullying, and Aaron was a victim of bullying growing up, so he was quite vulnerable. So his parents divorced, but he had really good relationship with both, checking in with them every day. So he was very, very intelligent. So he was studying engineering at TAFE in Perth. And he was dreaming of going to Japan because Japan, he felt, was, like, innovative and, like, all the best technology was coming out of Japan. He was really fascinated with the culture. So he was studying Japanese in the lead up for him to make this trip over to Japan, which he was really, really excited about. So at the age of 18, he decided to move out of home because he wanted to become more independent. And he began basically lodging with a lady that he met at church. So the morning of June 13th, 2016... Word document. Why? So the morning of June 13th, 2016, Aaron was having breakfast with his landlady when he got a phone call from a childhood friend's mother asking if he would be able to come over and install some software on a computer. And with Aaron being very like-minded about technology, he was more than willing to help. And also he was actually really keen just to maybe see his friend and play some video games. So he was, you know, happy to go over. So originally, his friend's mum was going to come and pick him up from the house, but the landlady was like, nah, look, I'll drop you at, like, Rockingham Shopping Centre and then they can pick you up from there. So that was the last time that Aaron was seen alive, was when his landlady was dropped off, when his landlady dropped him off at the Rockingham Shopping Centre. So now I'm going to talk about somebody else. Her name is Gemma Lilly. So she grew up in Stamford, Lincolnshire in England. Gemma had quite a morbid childhood stemming from her mother suffering a mental breakdown, and her mother actually ended up joining a really extreme religious cult. So from interviews with Gemma's dad, there was a lot of manipulation from the cult. All the money was to be funneled into the organization and the separation of families and stuff like that.
Your classic cult activities.
Classic cult activity.
Straight out of the cult playbook.
Yeah, exactly. Don't drink the Kool-Aid, but it wasn't actually Kool-Aid.
It was Flavor-Aid.
It was Flavor-Aid. Anyway, not making fun about cults. It's a serious issue. So she, her father ended up getting custody of Gemma and her siblings. So she was, you know, a bit morbidly inclined, aren't we all? Mm-hmm. But apparently it was just a bit next level with Gemma. She watched a lot of films about serial killers, and she also collected knives as a hobby. So, yeah.
That sounds like an unfulfilling hobby.
Take from that
hobby.
What you will. It's a weird hobby, I'll say that much.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so she developed an unusual obsession, like, you know, further from like an obsession with true crime, she actually became really obsessive about extreme violence. So at the age of 15, she began writing a book, and this book was called Play Zone, and it was about a brutal killer called SOS who like tortured his victims. A teacher apparently got a hold of this book and like was like mortified by the content. It was very graphic and very creepy. And her dad sort of saw it as, oh, look, maybe it's just like an expressive, like expression of creativity and stuff like that. And, you know, was trying to encourage her. Whereas her stepmother was just kind of like, nah, let's like not do this. Mm-hmm. Like, no. So I've got a passage from Play Zone. It says, "I feel as though I cannot rest until the blood or the flesh of a screaming, pleading victim is gushing out and pooling on the floor."
Oh.
Yeah.
That's doesn't really sound like and creative like, expression.
You know, no. I don't want to like bring her gender or her age into this, but you know, it, especially a 15-year-old like that. If I was a teacher and I saw like a kid mm-hmm. writing that,
mm-hmm.
I'd be worried.
As a 15-year-old, I was definitely writing Twilight fan fiction. Like that was the kind of thing that was coursing through my
Did
brain.
Did you ever
at 15.
Publish it on the website?
No, I don't actually ever think I wrote anything proper apart from like Edward ditched Bella and started shacking up with this really hot Australian chick called Ellen. Like that was the gist.
Fair enough. What a great gist that is.
Yeah, it was a thrilling tale.
And then another passage was, until all the roads and streets are streamed red and abandoned and the fear in the back of everyone's mind and the tongue of each human that's left standing is like, and on the tongue of each human left standing is SOS.
Oh my goodness.
So SOS would like take over Gemma's life, and you could probably get from the abbreviation this was taken like from the serial killer Son of Sam, mm-hmm. who was his name was David Berkowitz. It was in New York,
yes,
I think so. David Berkowitz, I'm pretty sure it was New York.
It was New York, and he killed a bunch of people because he said his neighbor's dog told him to.
Yes. Yes.
And then...
Yes, it was in New York City. Yes. So he thought a demon dog was telling him to kill people, so he killed people at, like, long range
mm-hmm.
with a gun. Anyway, so she had SOS tattooed on her body, and when she would get angry, she would, like, make a threat and say, SOS is coming for you.
Oh, no.
Big yikes. Okay. So when Gemma was 18 in 2009, she left England to move to Australia. So she was working at a tattoo parlor in Perth, and she was working at a Woolworths. So a colleague of her said of Gemma, around 4 or 5 months after we'd initially met, she told me that she was writing a book, and I read it, and it was about a serial killer who had a cult following and who liked to torture their victims to death. And I just thought she was imaginative and lived in a fantasy world and had a creative imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Gemma had her collection of knives, and she showed this person her knives and would show off like how sharp they were by like shaving off hair on her arm.
That made my entire body shiver.
Yeah. So Gemma started visiting like a local video shop and like renting out like serial killer movies and horror movies and stuff like that. And she told a woman working at the video shop that she wanted to kill someone before she was 25. I know.
Oh my goodness. I used to say that I wanted to get married before 25.
At least you weren't saying you wanted to kill someone by 25. All right. So in 2012, she met a man called Gordon Galbraith. who was a gay man who agreed to marry Gemma to help secure her permanent residency in Australia. She nicknamed Gordon Galbraith Gacy because she thought he looked like John Wayne Gacy.
Oh, no.
Like, I'm so sorry. There's a difference between an interest in true crime and then and I'm going to talk about this at the end, but, like, obsessing over serial killers, like, that's not my vibe.
And thinking
like,
they're not cool my bag. Is not the vibe.
No, because they're not. Anyway, so her father flew over from the UK for the wedding and, like, it was dress up. Like, they all dressed up. So her dad dressed up as Freddy Krueger from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Mm-hmm.
I know. And Gemma dressed up as Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So in 2014, Gordon Galbraith passed away.
Oh.
And on his death certificate, it actually listed the marriage status as being separated, which would have put Gemma's immigration status in jeopardy. So 2016, Gemma was working as a night shift supervisor at Woolworths. And through her connections with Gordon Galbraith, she met a woman called Trudy Lennon, who was a sexual submissive in the Perth fantasy bondage scene. And they bonded over both of them wanting to lose weight, and Gemma gave Trudy a copy of Playzone to read. And that's where this, like, really cooked friendship began between the two. So Trudy said to Gemma, I will fear you but respect you. I would not challenge you. I would naturally submit to you. My fear would be because I am in awe of you and because I respect what you are and I see you as my dominant. And Gemma replied, 100% perfect. It would seem you truly understand my SOS role. Good message. So Gemma was obviously living in the house that Gordon Galbraith owned.
Mm-hmm.
So Gemma offered for Trudy and her children to come and live with her because Trudy had fallen on hard times and needed somewhere to live. So Gemma would refer to Trudy as Corvina, which from the reading of this nickname, apparently it's some sort of like succubus sort of thing. And Trudy referred to Gemma, of course, as SOS. So this SOS thing, right? So she has it tattooed on her body.
Mm-hmm.
But she also had it on the license plate of her car. It was stitched onto a jacket, and she also gave Trudy an SOS tattoo as well. So they began to, Trudy and Gemma began to share this like homicidal fantasy. And Gemma confessed to Trudy that she had been like fighting off the urge to kill someone since she was a little child. Trudy was in love with Gemma and wanted to be the one that helped Gemma make the fantasy a reality. So Trudy thought that she had the perfect victim, and his name was Aaron Page Sweetman, who had grown up across the road from her for 10 years. He was sweet, he was sensitive, and he was caring, and most importantly, he was trusting, and she felt like that they would be able to deceive and manipulate him.
Oh, no.
So the 31st of May 2016, Trudy and Gemma agreed that they were ready to commit the murder, and they made three shopping trips to three separate Bunnings to buy a circular saw, acetone, bleach, a barrel, and 100 litres of hydrochloric acid. So June 13th, Trudy dropped her sons off at school and made the phone call to Aaron that morning. Aaron then agreed to meet Trudy, hoping that he would get to see his friend and play some video games, hopefully. So Aaron believed that he was just getting picked up by Trudy and then and maybe her son. But when Aaron and like from CCTV footage from Rockingham Shopping Centre, when Aaron climbed into the back seat, Gemma was actually in the front passenger. So the 15th of June 2016, so two days later, Aaron was reported missing after not coming home to his residence where he was, lodging with that lady. And his landlady's calls were going straight to voicemail, and she couldn't find him in any of his usual like hangout spots. The Aaron's landlady's name was Adrian, and she, you know, after 2 days was like, no, I need to let Aaron's parents know. Mm-hmm. So then Aaron's dad became really, really worried, and he, like, anytime, like, he would ring Aaron, like, Aaron would immediately pick up the phone. Like, that was just their routine. And they would speak daily. And so for Aaron not to answer the calls was really out of character. So then police were contacted by a man named Matthew Stray, who worked with Gemma at the Woolworths. And Gemma had actually shown a picture of Aaron and said, "I did it," because there was news coverage of Aaron on – there was obviously news of Aaron everywhere because he was very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and people were really, really worried about him because he was so trusting. And
she told somebody at work that she had done it?
Well, hold on. So she showed – Matthew then a picture of a tattoo that she was going to get in order to commemorate the her first murder, but not saying that she'd murdered, like, she didn't outright say,
mm-hmm.
"I murdered him." Mm-hmm. So then police were also investigating, like, the last known activity on Aaron's phone, and it hadn't been used since he disappeared, and neither had his bank cards. So Trudy Lennon was obviously the last person to see Aaron alive, because obviously Aaron told his landlady where he was going to be going. So then police then go to 22 Broughton Way, or as Gemma and Trudy called it, Elm Street, because they're fucked.
That's messed up, man.
So Trudy and Gemma arrived home and the police were there waiting for them, and Gemma attempted to get on one of her motorbikes and, like, speed away. But, like, detectives were like, "Show us your house, like, you know, like, let us in, like, we just want to, like, have a chat."
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Gemma escorted them around the house, and even showed them this, like, newly laid tiles that they'd done outside for, like, this outdoor patio that they were going to build. And police asked Gemma, like, where she had been on the morning, because they knew that Trudy was meeting up with Aaron, but they didn't know what, like, her movements were. Mm-hmm. And she said that she'd been, like, on an hour-long, motorbike ride. So then police decided that they weren't going to get any information if they were both of them together. So then they decided to split Trudy and Gemma up. So Trudy initially said that she hadn't spoken to Aaron at all, like, just completely denied it. And then she changed her story and said that she had, in fact, spoken to Aaron. She'd picked him up from Rockingham and driven him back to the house. But she said she had fallen asleep, and when she woke up, Aaron was gone.
Right.
A likely story. I'm going to sip some Coke. Hold on. Okay. So then police asked Trudy if Gemma had been trying to, like, make fiction a reality. Mm-hmm. Like, talking about this murder cult that Matthew Stray had obviously spoken to them about. And Trudy had said yes. And police then asked Gemma if Gemma had actually convinced her to bring, like, if Gemma had convinced Trudy to bring Aaron to the house, and Trudy once again said yes. So basically, Trudy was accusing Gemma of all of this shit, but then Gemma, in her interrogation, was actually pointing the finger back at Trudy,
mm-hmm.
Basically saying that she'd never heard of Aaron before that morning. Trudy apparently mentioned that she was going to be bringing a friend by the house who was taking an interest in their world of BDSM. And they were just going to, like, have a chat about, you know, what he had explored or what he was doing and stuff like that, and, like, what he wanted to do. So Gemma said that she had tried to, like, make conversation with Aaron, but Aaron had only been interested in talking about Trudy's son. Because obviously if this person's just talking to him about BDSM, he's probably like, "What the fuck are you talking about? I'm just here to see Trudy and install this software and maybe hang out and play some video games. Like, please leave me alone." Gemma said that when they got back to their house, Trudy and Aaron, like, when she'd gotten back from her motorbike ride, Trudy and Aaron were sitting on the couch talking while she was having a coffee in the kitchen. And then she said she began to feel really dizzy and she went into the bedroom to lie down to watch The Simpsons, where she said she fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
Don't bring The Simpsons into this. They didn't do anything.
Matt
Groening didn't need your bullshit. Like, no. So then she was then woken up by Trudy, and she then realized that Aaron was gone. And apparently Trudy said to him that Trudy had said to her, like, "Oh, Aaron got a text message from his dad and he left." And then Gemma noticed that, like, the couch had been moved to outside and that a part of the carpet was missing. odd. So then Trudy had explained to Gemma that like one of the cats had like pissed on the carpet and like that's why it was cut out and missing. I'm like, that's
overkill.
So during the interview, police said that Gemma had been like laughing and joking with them as she was talking, which they found a little bit
off-putting,
bit yikes, you know. So then police discovered the CCTV cameras that were in the garage because Gemma had had them installed because she had a shit ton of motorbikes, mm-hmm. and obviously she was worried about them getting stolen. So footage from the cameras showed Aaron entering through the back door of the house with Trudy and Gemma. 30 minutes later, it showed Trudy exiting the house and going back in with a sheathed knife. Then police found a secret room in the house, which was bare. The walls were covered in like blue tarp and they're like, what the fuck? There was like a gurney, like a stretcher.
Oh my God.
In the room that like, you know, like used in a hospital or an ambulance. Mm-hmm. So in the garage, police found a, like they were obviously like doing experiments with the hydrochloric acid. So they'd gotten like a Tupperware container. No, it wasn't a Tupperware because the hydrochloric acid would have totally fucked that up. But it was like a pot or something. And there was a piece of meat in the pot and they were experimenting with the meat with the hydrochloric acid to see like if it would dissolve the flesh.
Oh my God, that's so fucked up.
I will also preface, like I saw some photos of inside their house. Holy fucking shit. Like, sure, love a horror movie, love a thriller, but like, so, you know those, like, knife blocks? Mm-hmm. They had, like, a doll of Chucky, like holding on to, the like, the knife
block. Oh, my God. What?
Like, what the fuck? Like, no tea, no shade. You decorate your house, like, how you mm-hmm. want. But, like, please don't put, like, a toy of, like, a murderous doll.
Children lived
like,
there.
Near a bunch of knives. Like, that's fucked.
That's fucked.
Yeah, I know. Children live there. Could you imagine bringing friends over being like, hi, welcome to my house.
It's
like,
a house of horrors.
Sorry, my mum just really likes mm-hmm. horror movies. And it's fine.
I mean, not that it's like, you know, it's not the weirdest thing to be into in the world, but it is for those people, you know. They made it weird.
But it, like, yeah. I feel like it crosses a line. Like, I don't want to, like, make mm-hmm. fun of anybody or whatever, but I don't know.
There's
that just,
a, there's,
was
there's
really,
a, this person
it was really,
likes
it
a horror
made me
movie.
Feel really uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd found this piece of meat in a pot that had been covered in the hydrochloric acid, and that suggested to police that they'd been experimenting with like the effects of hydrochloric acid with flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They also found like in this like cloth, like kind of like, you know how makeup brushes come in those like cloth things that have the inserts where you can put the makeup
yeah.
brushes in and then tie it all yeah. up. So they found something like that, but that was where Gemma's collections of knives were mm-hmm. found, like in one of those things. And then they also found like a scalpel, and then they found the bone saw that Gemma and Trudy had bought.
God.
There was also this like list of there was an alphabetized list of ways to torture somebody. And then obviously so they showed a photo of the like outdoor patio mm-hmm. thing. It looked like shit. Like it looked really bad. Mm-hmm. And like one of the investigators in one of the articles I read was like it looked really bad. And it looked like it'd been like haphazardly.
Just whacked together.
Like put together. So they're like, okay, that's a bit sus. So they rip all the tiles up and the concrete. And there they found, oh God. There they found in like a 30 centimeter deep grave the body of Aaron Page Sweetman. We talk about a lot of shit on here, but this case in particularly has really fucked mm-hmm. me. As I've said before, I'm going to get into why, but every time I talk about this boy, my heart just absolutely mm-hmm. breaks. So a post-mortem examination of Aaron revealed that he had been stabbed in the neck and chest, and his jugular vein had been severed and both of his lungs and liver had been punctured.
Oh my God.
So really violent and aggressive. There were marks on his neck that showed that he had been – like someone had attempted to strangle him with a garrote, and he fought like fucking hell, and he had defense wounds on his hands. So Aaron like fought really hard for his life, having broken the garrote, and actually left a bite mark on Gemma Lily. So, yeah.
Good for him.
This guy was a fucking legend. So then detectives found the footage, like the CCTV footage of Gemma purchasing the tiles that they used to cover up Aaron's shallow grave. The really fucking disturbing thing was, so they'd obviously like dug the grave, like filled it over with dirt. Trudy Lennon then got her son to help her start laying the tiles, and he didn't know that like underneath was the body of his friend, Aaron.
Oh my God, that's beyond fucked up.
It's fucked. So the day after Aaron was found, so he was found on the 22nd of June 2016. So like from when he went missing, like police obviously did a really bang up job, and also really thanks to the witnesses and people that came forward, especially talking about Gemma and her problematic behavior, because linking her to Trudy, who was the last person to see Aaron alive. Amazing work. So the day after he was found, on the 22nd of June 2016, Gemma Lily and Trudy Lennon were arrested.
Good.
Gemma like pleaded not guilty. Absolutely disgusting. Trudy admitted to being an accessory to the murder. In interviews with Gemma's father, he refused to believe that his daughter had actually anything to do with it, and saying that she had sworn that she hadn't. I'm like, wouldn't trust her as far as I could throw her, but sure.
It'd be hard for her dad, so then, though, to come to terms with that.
Exceptionally. So the day after the murder, Gemma Lily had actually sent a text message to Trudy saying, "I'm seeing things I haven't seen before. I'm feeling things I haven't felt before. It's so incredibly empowering." And Trudy responded with, "You're welcome, SOS."
Ew.
Yeah. So a year later, the 2nd of October 2017, the trial began at the Supreme Court of Western Australia. Gemma on the stand testified that the text messages she had exchanged with Trudy were merely pieces of role play to help her with the sequel for her book Playzone. She said she had fallen asleep on June 13th and that it was Trudy alone that had killed Aaron. She said that she had laid the tiles down, but she didn't know that Aaron was buried in the shallow grave underneath. So Matthew Stray, the witness that I talked about who went to the police, he was on the stand as well. So he got on the stand and told the court that Gemma had confessed to him about killing Aaron and that she thought the police were dumb. He indicated to Gemma that he was going to go to the police, and Gemma texted him to say that she may have to make the problem go away. She then sent another text message after that saying that she had made the whole story up and that she was just playing and ha ha ha, look how creative I am. So then another colleague of Gemma's claimed that Gemma had told him of her desires to become a serial killer. So Gemma's actual book was not presented as evidence, but comments on her writing the book were allowed to be presented. So Aaron Page, when he was murdered, was at 51 kilos. So he was very small.
Oh my God, he's tiny.
And this was brought up in the court. Trudy Lennon was considered obese. Gemma Lily had actually lost like quite a bit of weight like leading up to the trial. Police had photographs of Gemma Lily like on the day of her arrest, and she was quite heavy set. She was in baggy clothes, and she was once a bodybuilder, but yeah, she had lost a lot of weight in the 16 months in Bandy Up Women's Prison. So State Prosecutor James McTaggart delivered his closing address at the start of the fifth week of the trial of Gemma and Trudy. And he said, "At the time of the murder, she was a person obsessed with violence and all kinds of unquestionably cruel manifestations of torture, and was writing about it. There was no doubt that Mr. Page Sweetman had been murdered with fatal knife wounds to his chest and neck. Between them, they did all that was necessary to cause Aaron's death. The cleanup was anything but. The homicide detectives found blood and incriminating DNA through, like, from one end of the house to the other. During the five-week trial, the jury was shown a series of graphic and incriminating crime scene photos linking the murder to both Gemma and Trudy. Yet one of the most damning pieces of evidence came from the killers themselves, the chilling video caught by their own security cameras taken moments before Aaron was murdered, showing Trudy entering the house with a large knife, which was most likely the murder weapon. The jury took less than 3 hours to find Gemma and Trudy guilty of murder. Judge Stephen Hall sentenced them to one of the longest jail sentences in Western Australia's history, 28 years before being eligible for parole. In his sentencing remarks, Justice Hall said that while it was not clear who had delivered the fatal injuries to Mr. Page, he held both women accountable for what he termed a morally repugnant crime. Mm-hmm. You are both equally responsible. There can be no doubt that both of you intended to kill Mr. Page. There is nothing to suggest that either of you had the slightest regret about what you've done. You both derived malicious pleasure from the suffering of Mr. Page's family. So 2 months after the conviction, on the 1st of January 2018, Trudy Lennon suffered burns to 21% of her body when a fellow inmate doused her with two litres of boiling water when Trudy Lennon was in line to receive medication. So the lady who doused Trudy with the boiling water pled guilty to her crime, claiming that she was disgusted about what Trudy had done to Aaron. And she was sentenced to a further 5 more years of imprisonment. And then most recently, about just over a week ago, Gemma Lilly lost her most recent appeal. So Gemma's barrister, Simon Waters, agreed – Waters or Waters, I'm not too sure – argued that the book, like even though that they hadn't physically used the book Play Zone as like a piece of evidence, they did reference to it a lot that she was writing about murder. So he – stated that like Play Zone shouldn't have been used as like an argument at all because it bore no resemblance to the murder of Aaron. He also argued that Gemma's collection of knives shouldn't have been allowed to have been presented as evidence because you know, police having found like dozens of knives at her homes, but said that Mr. Waters said that the argument that this showed the argument of the knives like showed like a propensity to kill, and that should not have been put forward to the jury. So then this third appeal was centered around a picture of someone being sliced, which was shown to the jury while Gemma was being cross-examined by a lawyer. So Mr. Waters argued that the picture was unfair and prejudicial to his client when it was produced at the trial. It should have led the case being aborted, and that Gemma should have been given a separate
because
trial.
Because there was a picture?
So it was a picture that Gemma had drawn of someone being sliced. And that stuff would be tricky because, like...
I understand.
I mean, obviously they did it. Yeah. Like, obviously they did it, but...
I mean, the fact that...
I don't know, like something like something creative like that, like a drawing or a book, like...
But the...
I don't know, like unless it, like... I don't know. I've got some emotions.
The book, like she called herself SOS, and she wrote in the book about SOS doing that. That's a pretty clear link.
Like, I don't have a problem with the book. Like I feel like that just shows that she's had these sort of like feelings for so long that have gone untreated and like that, you know. But I don't know, drawings. I feel like are a little bit. I don't know. Anyway,
the judge didn't agree. Trudy Lennon,
no, obviously. So Trudy Lennon actually has never appealed her conviction. So basically in the decision of the appeals court, they ruled that Gemma Lilly's like grounds of appeal didn't have any merit and her challenge to conviction should be dismissed. They said that the details about the book Play Zone were correctly included at the trial as evidence of Lily's character and of a tendency that she had, namely an intense interest in the nature of an obsession in serial killers and murder generally. Further, the court ruled the evidence about the knives was correctly allowed because together with the evidence, it showed Lily was more likely than an ordinary person to use a knife
as a weapon. Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Makes perfect sense.
Absolutely. So the appeal court also rejected Gemma's claim that the production during the trial of the picture showing someone being sliced should have been so they basically didn't agree that the picture was incorrectly used and that the jury should not have been dismissed. It found that while some of the jury may have found the image confronting, there was nothing in it which could have caused like an unfair prejudice against Gemma. So the image reflected the appellant's interest in killing and also reflected an injury similar to the one of the fatal injury suffered by Mr. Page, the ruling said. So the probative value of the image was substantially greater than any prejudice to the appellants arising from the image.
Appellant is correct.
Thank you so much.
Anytime, girl.
So Thank you. So Gemma actually wasn't present in the appeals court for the decision. Members of Aaron's family, including his mother Sharon and his father Keith, were in the court for the decision and afterwards said that they were happy with that Gemma's appeal had failed and that she would remain in jail. They also expressed the hope the decision meant the end of the legal process and that they could have some closure. Mm-hmm. Which
I also expressed that hope.
Yes. Okay, this is just something I've written. So, like, that's all the main parts of the case that I wanted to talk about are done. But this is just a little passage that I've written because I was having a cry after I finished doing my research. Okay. Something I wanted to end on was that the story of Aaron Page is not a new one. Time and time again on this podcast and on others, we talk about victims who were vulnerable. But something that is not talked about enough is the special vulnerabilities of the disabled people in this country and around the world. Aaron was a vulnerable guy. He was trusting and loving and tried to see the best in the people around him, which isn't a bad thing, and it isn't the reason why he was murdered. But there are too many stories nowadays of people with vulnerabilities like Aaron and people who are mentally and physically disabled being taken advantage of because they are seen as weaker. Reading Aaron's story and the tragic loss that his family and friends suffered reminded me of the case of Gemma Hader, who was murdered in 2010. A woman who was desperately in need of assisted living in the United Kingdom and who was left vulnerable to the people that she, like Aaron, thought were her friends. The building that Gemma was placed in put her in direct contact with a group of people who saw that Gemma was vulnerable and took advantage, getting her to stash drugs in her apartment, getting Gemma to start stealing and pretending that pretending to be her friend, the first friends that Gemma had ever had. She was left to fend for herself. Unlike Aaron, who was a driven young man with aspirations and who was exceptionally bright, Gemma was abandoned from the care system and never given a proper diagnosis, so she could never get the help that she so desperately needed. Gemma had gone out with this group of friends and they turned on her. She was assaulted for hours, her head hit against a radiator, her nose was broken, and she had masking tape wrapped around her head.
Oh my God.
One of these friends urinated into a beer can and forced Gemma to drink it. They walked her through the town, Gemma believing that they were walking her home, where she was taken down a railway bank. The group put a bin bag over her head, stabbed her once, and stamped on her head. They stripped her naked and set her clothes alight and left her to die. Gemma's family, much like the family of Aaron Page, sat through the trial and listened to the horrific details of the night of Gemma's murder. It's no secret that we are suffering from a compassion deficit, an empathy crisis in this world, but it is unfathomable to me as to see these monsters find the most vulnerable people in our society and choose them as their victims. Because like Aaron and Gemma, they were just wanting friends. I have a family member who suffers from a mental disability. And the thought of her being taken advantage of in any sense makes me violent. Like, I can't think of anything worse. And the thing that killed me about this case with Aaron is that he was going over to help someone.
Yeah, they targeted him.
Someone had asked for his help. Yeah. Trudy Lennon picked him because he was vulnerable. That she made that active choice to pick on Aaron. Whether or not she actually was the one to actually kill him,
it doesn't matter.
She is the reason why he is dead. She was someone that he trusted and she took advantage of
that. And she thought of somebody that she knew to be trusting and sweet and friendly and was like, you know what, these are the qualities that will allow me to victimize this person. And that's horrific.
Yeah. And like we talk about on this podcast all the time, like vulnerable people that get picked on because they're walking alone at night or, you know, doing like normal things and they're just seen as pieces of meat that these people can target
because of their desires.
Because of their desires. And it's just, why does this keep happening? Like, it's just, I'm just, yeah. So I'm really glad that I talked about Aaron. It was really nice to like read a little bit about him. Unfortunately, there's not enough information about Aaron on there. There's a lot
as
about
we always say.
His killers because obviously the media like hit on the fact that Gemma and Trudy, you know, are part of the BDSM culture, which, you know, some people have issues with. But also the fact that they were obsessed with crime and stuff like that and, you know, had obviously built this fantasy up in their heads and then committed this awful murder against Aaron. So there's not enough information about Aaron, unfortunately. But all the articles that I read written about him from teachers who said that he was really bright and lovely and, you know, had suffered bullying through his life but had pushed through with his studies and was really keen and had a really bright future – to be taken away by these two monsters who are abhorrent. Like, sure, I like crime. I like reading about true crime. I like to an extent, but what I cannot stand and what Ellen and I have talked about numerous times is the glorification of crime.
And the obsession.
Like, this is not... this is not to be celebrated. Like, people like David Berkowitz, John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy, like, Richard Ramirez, like, all you need to know about these people was that they were fucking assholes who mm-hmm. murdered people because they could. Like, there is nothing interesting mm-hmm. and there's nothing new to learn. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, with, you know, John Douglas and, like, the writing of Mindhunter and, like, learning about the, you know, psychosis of people that mm-hmm. kill, that's fine. But the whole engaging and obsessing with them, like, people buying John Wayne Gacy's artwork, you know, every, like, the Manson family thing, I'm never going to really understand. This celebrity of killers mm-hmm. is unfathomable and inexcusable. And obviously, like, Gemma, she murdered someone, yeah. But this was a vulnerable girl who, when she was very young, obviously very upset, and then got drawn into this
world
and became obsessed with it, and it made her feel safe and it made her feel powerful, and then she infected herself mm-hmm. with this fantasy of killing somebody and taking a life because she
exactly
could.
And I think there's so much
that
I
is
think,
why Aaron
I think
is
there's
dead.
So much glorification online, particularly about serial killers and school shooters and stuff like that, that people do kind of fall into these rabbit holes of being fascinated with them and stuff like that. Like, it's so accessible and is so normalized by those kind of communities that you know, you can see how it happens. But I mean, like, even in places like on Tumblr and stuff like that, there are massive groups of mostly young women who are obsessed with these serial killers and, you know, talk about them as if they were, you know, the Jonas Brothers or something. Like, let's collectively as a society
actually also
not
something
do that.
Something I didn't mention was obviously, like, Gemma had this obsession with, like, Nightmare on Elm Street and Freddy Krueger, and there was this letter that Gemma had written to the actor who played Freddy Krueger.
Oh.
And she said that she found Freddy to be, like, a father figure.
That girl had big
And she called
problems.
Him, like, Daddy Freddy or something like that. Like, troubles.
Oh, God. Troubles. I have empathy for her because she was obviously, you know.
I mean, but then again, it's like, you murdered someone because you could.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what everybody, like, that anyone who mm-hmm. murders, like, that you murdered because mm-hmm. you could. Like, that, there's no other mm-hmm. excuse. There is, like, it's not an excuse. You just did it
exactly.
because you wanted
and this
to
is a,
and because
this is
you
a
could and you didn't
prime
see the
example. This is a prime example of kind of what we were talking about last time as well, that, like, you know, if you are in a place where you're having these kind of obsessions
yes,
and fantasies
when we were
and stuff
about
like
the,
that.
The family annihilator, yeah.
Mm-hmm, you can get help, you know what I mean? Like, there's no point in which
entirely.
Anybody is past help. So if she had gotten that help, if she had acknowledged that, you know, the way that her brain was not correct, she could have gotten some help. And it's just such a tragedy. And I just feel so heartbroken for this poor young man. And I just can't imagine what it would be like to be his family. It's such a tragedy.
Like, he was the light of their lives and now he is gone because of these two women
so
and
many
their
goals.
Weird obsession.
He had so many goals that he was working towards, you know, that's like... I wish you got to go to Japan.
I know.
It really makes me sad.
Yeah. So that is the unfortunate murder of Aaron Page Sweetman. So very sad.
Very sad. Good job. Good research.
Yes,
very sad.
Very, very. So thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a fortnight's... Oh, no, less than that because we have
our belated Halloween episode.
Belated. But it's...
It's always...
Halloween is
It's always Halloween in my heart and therefore it will be Halloween exactly. in your ears in a few days' time.
Yeah. So that will be the next episode to come out. We also do have Patreon-only content. So if you do want to become a Patreon and listen to those amazing episodes, we are about to record part two of Ellen's most recent case, which really fucked me up in mm-hmm. part one.
Leonard Fraser, if you guys want to give that a listen.
Yeah, fuck. I also wanted to say, because I know we mentioned recently that we've had like a bit of like hate on our podcast in the podcast reviews on Apple, but we actually had some really, really lovely ones come in over like on the app the last couple of days. So lovely lady named Kirby sent us a really beautiful job. She's like, you girls are doing a ripping job. I love your realness and down to earthness. Yes, I'm aware they aren't words, but whatevs. Well done to you.
Every
guys.
Every word is a
love
word.
And look forward to
thanks,
episodes
Kirby.
Every week. And then it just says Wall K 1986. The girls do a fantastic job in researching, presenting Australian true crime stories in an individualized way. I love listening to this podcast, even though they make me feel old and far from trendy with their hip phrases and sayings. On the upside, though, I can take their sayings and use them at work, and my hipster interns think I'm trendy. Just for a moment, though. Keep up the great
oh,
work.
Oh, wow,
ladies.
We're so not trendy.
We're not trendy. So if you would like to leave us a review, more than welcome to head onto your Murder in the Land of Oz app, or you can do that on Facebook or Podchaser. Podchaser? Podchaser, the social media app for podcasts where you can individually review like separate episodes on different podcasts. You can get yourself a Podchaser app, Podchaser account. Just go on the website and
chase those
things.
Pods.
Chase those pods. As we said, Redbubble, Patreon only content, stunning work. What's his name?
Leonard Fraser.
I've forgotten the Leonard Fraser. We don't want to remember his name, but yes, that's what Ellen's covering at the moment. So yes, that's it for us. So we'll see you soon.
Goodbye.